Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Survey. ECISD Infrastructure Top Priorities. An online community survey released earlier this year details that the top three priorities for Odessans include invest in infrastructure, support Ector County ISD, and improve public safety. Opportunity Odessa launched the survey as it was funded by Grow Odessa. The result of the online community survey were detailed in a presentation on Wednesday morning in the Wolf Camp Room at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Lorraine Perryman, a co-chair for Opportunity Odessa, said during Wednesday's presentation, the survey was important as she knows Odessans aren't afraid to share their opinion. People have an opinion here, and they want to tell you what it is, Perryman said. There were 4,187 responses to the survey, as 4,014 were in English and 171 were in Spanish. Colin Sewell, a co-chair of Opportunity Odessa, said he believes that Odessa is in an inflection point of what it can become in the future. If we take advantage of that, we can see the growth go really high, Sewell said. If we miss the turn, we can find ourselves in the same place as we are today and potentially not quite as good a decade from now. The 12 priorities for making Odessa a more appealing place to live, work, and prosper over the next 10 years included in the survey were supporting ECISD, investing in existing and new amenities, invest in infrastructure, leverage the higher education assets, build up Odessa's local workforce, improve public safety, transform downtown Odessa, work with West Odessa, support the growth and development of Odessa's major healthcare assets, ensure that Odessa receives its fair share of state and federal funding, enhance the community's image, and expand the support of housing in Odessa. The top three in the survey were to invest in infrastructure, support Ector County ISD, and improve public safety. The bottom three in the survey were to enhance the community's image, transform downtown Odessa, and work with West Odessa. ECISD Superintendent Scott Murray listened to the presentation and said after the meeting that this reaffirms the public's position on the importance of education. It's humbling that our community recognizes that the education of our children is critically important to the future of our community, Murray said. When 4,100 people in our community say that in a survey, it validates the work that we do, but it also validates the importance of education in the lives of our kids and the lives of our families. People understand this is the future and we must invest in our kids. Midland native serves aboard USS Essex. A Midland native is serving aboard the USS Essex, a U.S. Navy WASP-class amphibious assault ship. Airman apprentice Olawale George attended University of Houston, Victoria. Today, George serves as an aviation support equipment technician. Aviation support equipment technicians manage and maintain almost all support equipment necessary for the smooth running and repairs of the United States Navy's aircraft, George said. George joined the Navy 1 year ago to serve the country. I joined the Navy for the numerous benefits the military offers, George said. I also look forward to the prestige of service to the country and myself. I also knew that joining the Navy would expose me to countries I never would have dreamed of visiting on my own. According to George, the values required to succeed in the military are similar to those found in Midland. My hometown taught me that dedication and discipline will help you achieve your dreams, George said. Home ported in San Diego, California, USS Essex is the second ship in the WASP class of multipurpose amphibious assault ships and the fifth ship named for Essex County, Massachusetts. Essex was a 1,000-ton ironclad river gunboat in the U.S. Army and later U.S. Navy during the American Civil War. According to Navy officials, amphibious assault ships are designed to deliver U.S. Marines and their equipment where they are needed to support a variety of missions ranging from amphibious assaults to humanitarian relief efforts. Designed to be versatile, the ship has the option of simultaneously using helicopters, Harrier jets, and landing craft air cushioned, as well as conventional landing crafts and assault vehicles in various combinations. There are many opportunities for sailors to earn recognition in their command, community, and careers while serving in the Navy. My proudest Navy accomplishment is becoming shipboard qualified, George said. As a member of the U.S. Navy, George, as well as other sailors, know they are part of a service tradition providing unforgettable experiences through leadership development, world affairs, and humanitarian assistance. Their efforts will have a long-lasting effect around the globe and for generations of sailors who will follow. Serving in the Navy means service to country and self, George added. City Council opts to join state opioid settlement. The Odessa City Council voted unanimously on Tuesday night to join the state opioid settlement. After a brief discussion about the state opioid settlement, District 2 Councilman Steve Thompson motioned for the City of Odessa to join the state opioid settlement, while District 4 Councilman Tom Sprawls seconded the motion. District 1 Councilman Mark Mata wasn't present during Tuesday's meeting. City Manager Michael Marrero, after the meeting, said the initial amount of settlement money the City of Odessa could receive would be between $550,000 to $600,000. Marrero said those funds are depending on how many other cities across Texas join the state opioid settlement. Marrero also explained the funds would be directed toward the Odessa Police Department and Odessa Fire Rescue to purchase Narcan. Marrero said the funds can also be used as a sub-recipient that would be for counseling or drug rehab. According to the Texas Attorney General website, there were 377 confirmed sign-ons as of Tuesday night. The City of Odessa would be included in Region 14. Marrero said after the meeting that after the initial settlement amount was awarded to the City of Odessa and the city could apply for additional funds. Marrero said the additional funds for Region 14 would be around $14 million. The confirmed sign-ons for Region 14 prior to Odessa City Council meeting on Tuesday were the City of Alpine, City of Pecos and Pecos County, City of Midland and Midland County, City of Big Spring and Howard County, and Reeves County. The City Council also approved the renewal of group life insurance AD&D coverage and retiree life insurance with Standard Insurance Company. Thompson abstained from voting on this agenda item. There were also four public hearing items presented by City of Odessa Planning Director Randy Brindley. All four items were unanimously approved. The first was considering approval to rezone from office to retail on Lot 2, Block 2 of the Faudry Road development. The second was approval for original zoning of planned development light commercial district on a 1.6-acre tract on Section 10, Block 41, near the southwest of the intersection of East Dorado Drive and Faudry Road. The third was approval of the original zoning for light industrial on Lot 11, Block 3, near southwest of the intersection of Industrial Avenue and East Interstate Highway 20 Service Road. The final was approval of a specific use permit to allow a beauty shop one-chair accessory use in a single-family three-zoning district on Lot 25, Block 19 in the Lawndale Addition. Brindley explained the specific use permit to allow a beauty shop one chair would be a temporary permit. He also said the business could operate from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. 7 days a week. Other items. approved the request by Roger Gearhart, lessee, Torrentino Incorporated, owner of a specific use permit to allow a dance hall in a retail R zoning district on Lot 43, Unit 3A and 2.68% interest in common area, Block 13, Wedgewood, 1541 John Ben Shepherd Parkway, Suite 18. Approved designating Industrial District 1-B as an industrial district. Approved designating Industrial District 1-C as an industrial district. Approved designating Lot 1, Block 1, Parkway RV Group, LLC as an industrial district. Approved annual renewal of Motorola P25 radio systems maintenance support. Approved purchase of street sweeper trucks for street department for $570,088. Approved renewal of contract for property insurance with TML Intergovernmental Risk Pool. Approved renewal of contract for benefit claims administration. Approved renewal of medical stop loss insurance with Berkshire Hathaway through Risk Strategies. Approved renewal of excess workers' comp insurance with Safety National Casualty. Approved renewal of public entity liability insurance with State Retention Group. Approved adoption of the Family Health Project revision January 1, 2022. Approved award of base bid for air handler unit C4 in the amount of $33,000. An alternate number one bid to existing air handler C1 motor in the amount of $13,510 to Bosworth for the City of Odessa Municipal Court Air Handler Unit AHU. Approved bid award for liquid ammonium sulfate to Chameleon Industries for $0.158 per pound. Approved bid award for sodium hydroxide to DPC Industries for $0.4410 per pound. Approved bid award for liquid ammonium sulfate to Chameleon Industries for $415 per ton. Approved bid award for liquid gas chlorine to DPC Industries for $1,485 per 1-ton cylinder and $250 per 150-pound cylinder. Odessa businessman challenging Simmons. Local businessman Billy Tripp issued a news release formally announcing his candidacy for Ector County Commissioner Precinct 2. Tripp will face incumbent Greg Simmons and challenger Ryan Patton in the GOP primary on March 1st. That primary will decide the seat with no Democratic challengers. Tripp is a lifelong Odessan and a first-time candidate. Our county government faces many different challenges. We must protect our assets, be good stewards of the blessings we have received, and yet keep pace with innovative outlooks for future growth. His news release detailed that he has experience in building construction, oil and gas production, and ranching and farming. He holds a bachelor's in accounting from Texas A&M. Obituary, Juanita Joy Nita Golson Zant. Odessa, Juanita Joy Zant, age 90, of Odessa, went to be with the Lord in the early morning of December 6th. Memorial service will be held on December 20th, 10 a.m. at the Bridge Church, located at 3901 East Yukon in Odessa, with Reverend Donnie Williams. Juanita was born in Joinerville, Texas, to Tommy and Lillian Golson on October 21, 1931. Juanita Zant is preceded in death by her parents, sisters Doris Teer and Reba Odom, husband Joe Zant, daughter Kathy Hoggard and husband Johnny Hoggard, son Jerry Zant, and granddaughter Amber Zant Weiss. Juanita Zant is survived by son Cliff Zant and wife Lindsay, daughter Laura Zant, daughter-in-law Heidi Zant. She is survived by many grandchildren. She is also survived by Denise Cheney, who she loved like a daughter, with her daughters Marcy Cheney and Lori Longfellow, along with grandchildren Xander and Sierra Falk, and countless family and friends. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to the Bridge Church Children's Ministry or to Amber Zant by Scholarship Fund through UTPB. The family wishes to extend their appreciation for all the prayers and support during this difficult time. Mom, Nita, Grandmother, Great-Mother, and Mama's Aunt, we will greatly miss your love, laughter, prayers, and instruction. Death Notices. Margarito Rivas Acosta, Jr. Margarito Rivas Acosta, Jr., 57, of Odessa, died Wednesday, December 8th, in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for 4 to 9 p.m. Friday, December 17th, at Acres West Funeral Chapel. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. William Dale Davis, Sr., Odessa. William Dale Davis, Sr., 84, of Odessa, died Saturday, December 11th, in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. December 17th at American Heritage Funeral Home. Jimmy Braswell is officiating. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery, Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Gloria Dossie Phillips, Odessa. Gloria Dossie Phillips, 72, of Odessa, died Tuesday, December 14th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 3 p.m. December 17th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
Odessa American, Monday, December 13th, 2021. Longtime lawman files for JP. OA News at OAOA.com. Retired OPD Officer Ron Hughes formerly filed to run for the office of Ector County Justice of the Peace. His precinct second in the March 2022 pre-Republican primary election. Hughes had a 34-year career with the Odessa Police Department, retiring at the rank of lieutenant, and during his tenure worked in or oversaw every division or unit within the department. Hughes is married to wife Vicky, and together they have two adult children and two, soon to be three, grandchildren. Hughes will face incumbent Missy Walden and Cynthia Moreno in the GOP primary. The deadline to file to run is Monday. Along with having attained his masterpiece of officer license, Hughes has also attended Odessa College. Early voting for the March 1st Republican primary will begin February 14th, 2022.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, December 11th, 2021, weekend edition. Section A. A YWLA solution that boosts academics. A commentary by Stuart Doreen. Tuesday's community meeting about Young Women Leadership Academy's possible move to the Washington STEM Academy was not for the faint of heart. There was opposition to the move, ready to make their respective points, even if for some it required them to get personal doing it. A lot of frustration was released because this potential move of the all-girls school into Southeast Midland has been seen by some as one where one side will win and the other will lose. However, does winning and losing have to be the case? Is there a scenario where neither side loses, but even more importantly, a community gains? Let me be more clear. Is there a scenario where Young Women's Leadership Academy moves and the southeast portion of Midland and the neighborhoods around Washington's STEM win? I think there might be. First of all, let me say that it has been most disappointing about the debate concerning a YWLA move and the defense of a campus in the southeast Midland neighborhood. There have been many reasons for and against offered. However, that what must be answered is, will the final outcome, whatever it may be, improve academic outcomes? I probably come out across as a broken record, but after our students' health and security, our district's main responsibility is improving academic outcomes. When your district ranks in the bottom quartile of the largest districts in the state, that is a reality we need to continue to address. Second, I wrote in this space last week that I believed you, YWLA, should not move. I still believe that, but I can be convinced if one shows me a chance of improved academic outcomes. Here is such a scenario. Our education process should create long-term opportunities for academic success. Let's build an education system that is best for Midland now and for 30 years down the road. Those possibilities should challenge us to look at ourselves and not be comfortable or complacent, but to say, is that the best we can do? When someone asks me, is a straight move of YWLA to Southeast Midland in the building that currently houses Washington STEM the best we can do? What if I say no? What if I say there should be a second component to this move? What if district leaders state that in addition to the girls moving across town to a permanent campus, that the students at Washington are not going anywhere? Given that YWLA operates with a STEM-based curriculum, would it be possible for the Washington STEM to operate as a potential feeder into YWLA, at least on the girls' side of the equation? Such a scenario creates three wins and potentially no losses. First, those at the meeting can feel confident that they were listened to and were heard. That is a win for the community, people being listened to and heard. Second, we give YWLA a permanent home. All indications are YWLA is going to be a success. Letting them put down some roots feels like a win. Third, rather than disband the lagging Washington STEM elementary program, it keeps it in place and calls attention to it. It allows MISD to make an emphatic statement that we are going to keep and improve this STEM rather than allow it to plod along and fail. It allows us to say we are going to do the tough work of keeping it, helping it to succeed, and making it the real school of choice it was designed to be. The beauty of this scenario is we have time before YWLA grows to the point before we have to make a decision because of capacity. Still, during that time, the Washington STEM students will not have to look far to see potential role models. There are other questions to be answered. It starts with what to do about the boys. I don't know what to do, but with a mindset of we are going to work together to find solutions, I believe we will. One thing I like about the scenario laid out is it provides residents in Southeast Midland the opportunity for two high-quality K-12 experiences, Idea Travis and Washington/YWLA. Pretty cool. What I also like about the opportunity is it would make Southeast Midland, including Carver Center and Idea Travis, the epicenter of some of the most dynamic educational opportunities in Midland. And in each case, educational outcomes hopefully will have improved and it will become a model for other areas in Midland. People from all over the city will want their children educated in Southeast Midland because YWLA, Carver Center, Idea Travis, and Washington STEM may very well rank as not only the best around Midland, but the best in the region, and maybe one day across the state. Let me also say that there were Midlanders who were right to be frustrated. Indeed, they deserved to ask questions and be critical. Sadly, their anger and disappointment were directed at the wrong people. But let's not dwell on that. While Dr. Ramsey and her team did not get us here, they are the ones challenged to move us forward. I think they will succeed. The problems Ramsey's team uncovers on a daily basis adds to an already lengthy list of places where the district must improve. What I have provided, I believe, won't make many problems go away, but it's worth considering when it comes to the Washington STEM YWLA problem. More importantly, it provides the framework for all of us to say, let's quit beating each other up over the problems and start working together on the solutions. Let that become our mantra. Let's work together on solutions to improve academic outcomes.
Seafood and gout care. Dear Dr. Roach, about 3 months ago, I had an attack of gout. I believe it was my first, but I may have had one a few months earlier that was diagnosed as a foot infection. The symptoms lasted well over a month. My last uric acid reading was 5.1, but it was 8.6 in February 2021. I am watching my diet. I have not eaten red meat in over 30 years and have basically eliminated shellfish, which I love. I also take 100 milligrams of allopurinol. Is occasional shellfish a real risk? How likely is it that it is a one-time event? Is gout now likely to be a lifelong concern? B. Answer. Gout is caused by deposits of uric acid crystals in various tissues of the body. One of the most common places for these deposits is the joint of the big toe. An acute attack of gout can be extremely painful and can damage the joint. Uric acid crystals can also damage the kidney, so preventing gout attacks is the goal. In people who have gout, this is achieved by making lifestyle changes, weight control, avoiding excess alcohol, especially beer and spirits, and dietary restrictions, and by medications. Far too many people with gout take medications that are known to increase gout risk. For example, the blood pressure agents, thiazide diuretics such as HCTZ, and beta blockers. Diet has been associated with gout for centuries. Animal protein, including from fish and shellfish, is known to increase gout flares, while plant-based proteins reduces the risk. Dairy products also reduce gout risk. However, the risk of getting a flare from occasional fish or shellfish is small when you are on treatment. I certainly think it is reasonable to try your favorite meal and see whether it causes a flare. I think it's unlikely to do so.
Weight loss doesn't take sting out of observations. Dear Abby for Thursday. Dear Abby, during the last year, I made significant changes to my life. I left an emotionally abusive marriage after 23 years, which gave me the confidence to take better care of myself. I have lost 70 pounds and am almost down to the weight I was in high school. I am very proud of this. My issue is my family has now started using my former weight as a measuring stick. I am often told things like, "You should see your cousin, she's almost as big as you were," which is quickly followed by an offhand, "No offense," which tells me they know it offends me. I said as much to them at first, but the insulting comparisons continue. It's not just one person saying this, it has actually become the family standard. I know I was very large, but this is extremely hurtful. I find myself avoiding family visits because the subject seems to invariably come up in some way. Is there anything beyond what I have already tried that can convey the distress this causes? Former fat relative in Missouri. Dear relative, your relatives have been told that alluding to your former weight problem causes you distress. That it continues tells me they are thoughtless at best, not to mention rude and inconsiderate of your feelings. Because you can't change their behavior, and neither can I, the logical solution is to do what is best for you and see less of them. Dear Abby, I have begun high school and I love it, but I'm bumping into friend problems. My new friend has many other friends and one big friend group, and she's inviting me to join them. I barely know these people, and some of them make me uncomfortable, but I still eat lunch with them sometimes. I don't want to be rude to my friend, but I am unsure if I want to join this group. I have a separate friend whom I met in middle school, and I have reason to believe that I am his only friend. He eats lunch with me and my upperclassmen friends. They ignore him while he talks to me about the things we like. I am afraid I am hurting him by making more friends. Any advice? Stressed teen in New Jersey. Dear teen, new relationships take time to develop. With time, as you and your new classmates get to know each other better, you may feel more comfortable with them. If that doesn't happen, you may want to make other plans for lunch. That you have been including your middle school friend during those lunches, I think, is loyal, caring, and compassionate. Doing so is not hurting him. If he's unable to integrate and become part of the group, no law says the two of you must have lunch with those people every single day. Consider alternating lunches with other students so you can widen your circle of friends. Friends are treasures. The more of them you have, the richer your life will be.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.